Hello, everyone. Welcome to the call again. So glad you could join us for the Grief Healing Telesummit. Top experts share their best holistic healing methods to transform grief into healing and living again. I'm Chelsea Hampton, your host, founder of With Sympathy, Gifts and Keepsakes, as well as Global Grace, the World Association of Spiritual Grief Healing. Today we have a special guest for you. Her name is Lori Pedersen, and she created the IDidNotKnowWhatToSay.com platform as a way to provide support and resources to people that wanted to help their friends and family through the grieving process. Her website, IDidNotKnowWhatToSay, has an incredible amount of information, and it's very helpful if you are looking for support, whether to support your client or a family member. Unfortunately, over the past 20 years, Lori has lost several family members and friends, including her mom, to cancer in 1993. So that's why she has so much experience as well, just based on personal losses. Luckily, she had many friends and relatives that were there for her as she went through the process of grieving to healing. And she knows firsthand that people want to support a grieving loved one, but they often don't know where to start. So that's where Lori comes in. So welcome, Lori. We're thrilled to have you today.
Thank you, Chelsea. I really appreciate the opportunity to be part of your teleconference. It's so important for everybody to start talking about these issues, and it's great to see such a wide community starting to deal with grief and loss and how to heal from it.
Yeah, so tell us how you got started with your platform, IDidNotKnowWhatToSay.com. Of course, you know, all your losses, but what made you, like, take the step to go out in the public and really start getting this information out to everyone?
Well, after my mom died, I really was blessed with so many people that were supportive. But as I talked to people after my experience, I found out that that was not the case for many people. They had people that were not supportive or walked away or just did not give them the type of support that I had. And that, to me, just it was sad. I was really saddened to hear that people didn't have a good experience and that people weren't supportive. I was actually kind of shocked. People would say really kind of horrible things or just would not be, people get scared, so they don't necessarily call the person or act as a supportive network. So actually when the internet started getting a little bit more popular, I found that one day I just sat down and put down all my ideas and all the things that my friends had done for me and put it into a website and just really started getting out there in Facebook and Twitter. It took a couple years because it really is, because it was such a painful experience losing my mother, it wasn't something that I jumped into right after. I mean, it took several years for me to actually sit down. My mom died in 93, and even though I had the idea for a long time, I didn't actually sit down and put it onto paper until 2009. So it really did take me a little bit of time to get the courage to put my story out there as well as put down the resources. And the vast expansion of the internet and Facebook and Twitter really helped get that message out, whereas before you wouldn't have been able to reach as many people.
And then also tell us, on your website, IDidNotKnowWhatToSay.com, you have a lot of resources on there. Like, tell us about all the different authors you interview and the types of information available, just both so the listeners know it's available, as well as grief professionals.
Well, what I've done is I've compiled, I first started with a section that I call inspirational messages, and those are actually real messages that I either received personally or I received from people that come to the website. And so if anybody has a really wonderful letter that they received from someone or an idea, I try to update the website periodically with new ideas so people can come to the site and say, oh, I never thought of doing that for someone. So that's one section. then I also have a list of grief support groups, and that's something that I list for people for free. So if someone has a nonprofit or a church organization or any type of organization that helps individuals that are going through all different types of grief, there is a section that I do list all grief groups. So anybody that has that information, I'd welcome them to submit that. And then I also have a section that has sympathy gifts. So if someone wants to buy a sympathy gift, and we have Chelsea's gift items on there as well. And I do have a blog, so we do periodically post different stories on there. And one of the things I do on the blog is what I call is a virtual book tour. And so I've talked to different authors that have written either about their personal story about grief, or just if someone is in the grief counseling, how they practice. The virtual book tour really focuses on healing and how people went through the grief process and healed through it. And so I've interviewed a number of different authors, people that have lost their husbands, their children, had miscarriages. So I have a wide variety. So if any of the listeners have written a book, we'd love to talk to you about being part of that virtual book tour as well. And one of the areas that is actually kind of dear to me is what I call an inspirational adventure part, is that in one of the things that my friends did for me when I was going through the grief process and recovery was they got me out of the house. They did things with me that you probably wouldn't think, oh, someone's grieving, they wouldn't want to do that. But one of the things my best friends did for me after my mom passed away was take me to Disneyland. And it was such a wonderful experience. And you would never think, oh, my gosh, this person just lost their mother. Why would they want to go to Disneyland? But first, it was a place that I always went with my mom. We lived in California, so we always went there, and my mom loved Disneyland. So it was a way for me to connect. I always say it's great to go someplace where you can scream and no one hears you. So being on a roller coaster is always kind of great for that. And it was just a nice, warm, fun thing to do, and it really kind of helped move me along in the process of finding my new normal after my mom died.
That was so nice of your friends, and it's so interesting that you had a positive support system, because as you said, I think it's usually the opposite. And I know, in contrast to you, the reason I got into this line of work was because I had the bad experience, so it's so nice to hear. Yay, the good experience. So, yeah, and you were going to share some of your best tips, you think, on how someone can support a grieving friend or family member.
So a couple of things that stood out for me that I've kind of heard over and over, the first one is don't be afraid to reach out. One of the things that I find most is people just get stuck. They just feel like, I can't say the right thing. I don't know what to do for this person, so I'll just do nothing. And it is amazing to me how the smallest thing was so important to me when I was going through this. Just one of my best friend's mother-in-law sent me a card, and I thought, oh, my gosh, how wonderful. You know, someone who barely knew me just wrote me a little short note that says, I'm thinking about you, you're in my heart. And I thought, that is just was the kindest thing, just because she barely knew me. And the smallest thing can be just so important, and not running away. I mean, I hear so many times people say, oh, well, I didn't know what to say, so I did nothing, and I haven't talked to that person in 20 years now. And I have a friend that did that to me. I have a friend that was in a situation that he promised me he would be there for me when my mom died. He'd known me since we were kids, and when it happened, he was just like, I can't be there for you. And haven't spoken to him since, which is sad. It was a close friend. So I know those things happen, and you lose touch with people. And so that my biggest thing is just don't be afraid of saying the wrong thing or doing the wrong thing. You know, start out small. do something, you know, just say, I'm here for you, or just listen. I mean, you don't have to fix all of the problems. Actually, I'm running into my other tip. So first one is, don't be afraid to reach out. If you come with a loving heart, the person's going to know it. And just, you know, the next thing was, don't act, no act of kindness is too small. So if that means sending a card, making a phone call, offering to walk someone's dog for them or take their kids to school, all those little things help someone that is going through a loss.
Can I add a few examples of my personal experience?
Sure.
Of the little things that make a difference? Very similar to yours, 1 year after my mother passed away, which was in 1996, one of my friends who actually worked in the funeral industry, like a friend from high school, we weren't that close anymore, she sent me a card on the 1 year anniversary of loss. And that really was the only card that I got, so that meant so much. And now, 17 years later, her mother passed away. So she will be getting a card from me on the 1 year anniversary of loss. So it's kind of like all these years later, you still remember that one card.
And
so,
isn't that amazing? Just those little things. And the person probably thought it wasn't that big of a deal. And it is so incredible how those little things just, you remember. You remember those things.
Yeah, and I think it's because so many other people perhaps are keeping their distance or maybe forget. You know, people go back, of course, to your everyday life. So it makes a huge impact. So just how easy, send your friend a card, even if you haven't talked to them in a year, like your friend who lost touch with you. Mm-hmm. All you would have done is send you a card to reconnect the relationship.
Yeah, so go ahead. Sorry.
So go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's kind of how I felt. It took me a while to get over that, but yeah, actually, I was going to say the card, my old roommate used to send me a card on my mom's birthday because she had a similar birthday. So she, for years, she would send me just a little note to remind me that she was just thinking about me. So it takes 2 seconds to do something like that, and it just makes such a world of difference just to know someone remembered. As we know, the world goes on. Even though you're going through a huge loss, the world keeps marching on, but your world's changed, and it's nice to know that someone acknowledges that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, those small acts are actually huge, and people remember them for years and years and years.
And I should add, too, you probably are aware of this, but maybe some of our listeners aren't, Dr. Alan Wolfeld, who's a renowned grief expert, he describes there's three groups of people who will help you after loss, basically. Like a third of the people will be neutral. A third of the people will basically leave and be gone, but then a third will step up and help you. But I found it's typically the people you don't expect. So that's just kind of a general guideline that he gives.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't know if it works out quite to a third, but there's a lot of unexpected people that show up, and you're thinking, wow, that was not the person. And sometimes it's the person that you thought would be there isn't. That's the surprise. I think that was the biggest surprise to me, was people that I knew since I was a kid that knew my mom and that weren't there. And you're like, wow, you were not the person I thought would not be there.
Yeah, and I think part of it, too, and let me know your thoughts, is in Western society, we're just not really educated on how to deal with death and dying. We don't learn really how to support a grieving person through society. We kind of learn it on our own if we go through it, or there's just a taboo fear around death, at least in our area, in the United States. What are your thoughts on that taboo?
Well, it was interesting. When I was looking for a company to help me promote the website with, you know, social media and
the
person, one of the people that I interviewed was one of the top people in the industry. And when I told him what I did, he was like, "Why would you do that?" That was his response. Well, don't just go to the funeral and send a card and that's it? And I was like, "Wow, I don't think you're the person I want to work with."
Yeah, there's a prime example of why your work is so important. That's crazy.
Yeah, I was stunned.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon for people to think that. And I think a lot of people you go to the funeral, you pay your respects, and then the next day that person gets on with their life. But if someone's lost their husband or wife, or if they've lost a child, or if they've lost a parent, I mean, life doesn't, you don't get over it the next day. I mean, it's a lifelong process of, you can get back to your life, but it's a new life, it's a new normal, and it takes time, and it's... I was stunned when this person said that. But it is how a lot of people react to it. It's almost like when there's a death that they think they're going to catch it or something.
Right.
Gonna, if I talk to you about death, then something bad's going to happen to me. Or.
And I've seen it firsthand with people who've lost children, other parents just are almost afraid of the family. You know, of course, with someone who loses a husband, you're not involved in the couple life as much. So, very sad. So it's great that we're trying to get more education out so people get the correct support, can build a supportive network. So, let me not interrupt, and you want to give us your next thought.
The next one is this trying to listen and not feeling the need to fix things. So a lot of times when we listen to someone that's especially going through a really hard time, I think the natural tendency, especially for Americans, is to want to fix it. Okay, you have this problem, so I have to help you fix it. But grief is a natural process, and I find that more importantly, just listening and letting the person talk about their stories, about the person, their memories, talking about how they're feeling, and just letting those emotions flow rather than, okay, here's your action plan, you got to get over it now. So I think one of the most important things you can do for someone, especially in the early stages of grief, is to just listen. Just let that person talk. Don't feel like you have to fix their world. They're going to have to slowly, one day at a time, just find out, what their new normal is going to be. And they're going to have to fix it for themselves. It's not something for you to fix. It's something that they're going to have to go through the process and find out. You know, if someone's lost their husband, they're going to have to go through many, many steps of, their life has changed drastically.
And
just allow them to talk about it.
What do you think about, in a situation where it's been 6 months and the person passed away, and they have friends, family saying, "Move on, you should be over it by now." I think it's hard for the bereaved person sometimes to explain, "No, that's not the situation. Here's what's going on." Do you have any thoughts on how the bereaved person can explain their need clearly to their friends and family around them, to listen to them, to not push them, like you're saying, not fix it? Like, how can the bereaved person educate their family and friends to help them?
I think that's probably one of the hardest things, because, your family doesn't want to see you in pain. And so they're going to try to push for you to not show your pain. And I think you have to be somewhat assertive in saying, these are the things that I need to do for myself now, and that 6 months is not very long.
Right.
The average person goes through grief, a substantial loss. It can take up to 8 years to really feel like you're on solid ground again. So 6 months is just such a short period of time. I think that you have to really sit down with your family and and show them that this is your life and you're going to take it one step at a time. And just because, you know, Susie down the road, you know, went back to work and everything was fine after 6 months doesn't mean necessarily that that's the path that you're taking, and that it needs to be your path, not the neighbor's path, because Susie may have gone back to work, but you don't know what's happening behind closed doors when she gets home.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just 6 months, because that seems to be like a common time frame. People like to say, why aren't you feeling better yet? And I was just at a Joyful Grieving workshop, well, I guess in the last month, and one of the participants on the same topic had said, you know, she has her grief burst. She'll start crying, you know, when you hear a song, a TV show, a flower, you know, how anything can make you cry. But she would not do it in front of her kids and husband because it would, I think, make them feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And, of course, our advice was no. If you need to cry, you cry wherever you are. You're mm-hmm. the one who just lost your mother. So you do what you need to do. Let your family know what's going on with you. So I just add that because, you know, you said be assertive with people. So that was a prime example of this lady feeling awful, but hiding it, you know, from her own husband and kids. So,
especially with kids, I think they need to see that it's natural, that it's natural to grieve the loss of somebody. It's and I think that's the one place that we shelter kids a lot. And there's some appropriate ways of doing that. Just, I mean, you don't want to unload all your emotions on a child because they wouldn't be able to handle it. But
sure.
I do think that naturally showing that people cry and they laugh and they remember and all of the emotions that go with it are natural. They're not something to be ashamed of or something to hide. You know, there's going to be one moment you're laughing about an old memory and the next minute you might be crying because you miss that person so much. And that's all natural. And I think hiding it kind of makes it, especially a child, feel like, oh, I can't show these emotions. These are bad. These are bad emotions to show.
Sure, and that continues the pattern of being afraid of death and hiding your emotions. So, yeah,
right.
I think that's an excellent point to have the kids see it as a natural process. It's part of life, and this is how we work through it. So,
and I think the more that people can understand that it's natural and that you're not psychologically disturbed or anything like that,
it's
so important. I mean, it's a really natural process that pretty much everybody's going to go through. It's not, I mean, if you care or love someone, at some point someone is going to pass away and you're going to have to deal with the loss of someone. And I think that the more that we can understand that it's natural and the feelings are natural and that you're not insane or anything like that, that everybody goes through this.
Right, kind of the stigma of going to perhaps a therapist or counselor when that is an awesome way to get help, you know, like a trained person whose niche is grief support. You can get a tremendous amount of help, again, because you need that support system, whether it's a counselor, your family, a friend, a church, a hospice bereavement group. That's an important point, to build a support network to help you get through the process, the long process.
So I think the more that you talk about it, especially in the first, you know, early stages and the early years, it helps you heal rather than if you keep stuffing it down, it comes out in different ways down the road. So the more that you can find that support and whatever that is, and everybody's different. One of the things when I started putting this information out is someone said, I hate this when people look at me with the pity face. You know, the minute you mention that there's a death or something, you get this sad look in the person's eyes.
Sure.
So that particular person didn't like that kind of reaction. They wanted to feel normal again. And so it's kind of a balance of finding out what that person needs. And listening, I think, is one of the most important ways, because, you know, someone may not want to talk about it every single day, but when they are ready to talk about it, it's nice to know that there's someone there to listen.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a very important point.
And so, you know, one of the next things I had was what not to say, and we've touched on a couple of them. The are you better now, or you can find another spouse, or you can have another child, or it's been 6 months, why aren't you over this yet? All these kind of things that people say. And some of them, you know, people have heard it a million times. So I'm sorry for your loss when you've heard that 20 million times. It gets a little old. You hear it on TV all the time. And it's a nice gesture. It's just because that's what people say all the time. It gets.
Yeah.
That's my one.
It's kind of like people say you're in my thoughts and prayers, which is perfectly nice. But when you do hear it 30 times, it just doesn't have as much meaning. So I think it might be perhaps you could even say, oh, you know, your mom meant this to me. Oh, or your father, he was such a great guy. My favorite memory of him was this. This is how he impacted my life. You know, even just telling a little story in a sympathy card, or when you see the person, you know, things like that. And my pet peeve is similar to yours, is when people start their way of making you feel better, maybe the well-intentioned but not well-mannered, when it starts with, at least you can have another child. At least he didn't suffer. At least this, at least that. So just, this is a guideline whenever you start a sentence with at least, you're probably going down the right path. So.
Stop right there.
Why? So tell us more of the things of not to say, if you had more to tell us.
One of the things that I remember my sister had this experience after my mom died. Her friend was getting married, and she went to the wedding, and everybody there was like, well, why are you here? I mean, my sister needed kind of something to lift her spirit, something positive to be at. And the reaction she got was like, well, you should be home grieving, you know. Why are you doing anything? And she was just so hurt. And these were friends of my mom's. They were people that we've known forever. And here she went to go get some loving support, and she was kind of banished. One of the things, you know, if someone, especially like with holidays and things like that, if someone comes, graciously welcome them. If they decide they don't want to come, graciously accept that that's their choice. It's so that was one thing that I found that I was stunned about, how people, you know, either you're not doing enough or you're doing too much, and people always seem to have an opinion about what you're doing. And
for the bereaved person, really, they are the expert on themselves. They know what is best for them. So, yeah, and I know sometimes that's hard to take it to heart with people around you, perhaps saying other things. But in reality, listen to yourself. Check in regularly with yourself. And even learning about grief yourself will help you know what to expect.
So I think just kind of, you know, one of the things I try to remind people, what would you want someone to say to you? If you just went through a devastating loss, what would you want someone to say? Because I think a lot of times we always think it's never going to happen to us. So, if you, you know, just stop and take a step back before you lend advice or you know, tell someone how to live their life. You know, would you really want someone saying that to you if you just lost your husband or you just lost a child? So that's what I try to focus people in on, is, you know, how can you come to that person with an open heart and just let them know that they're supportive? I'm here for you, whatever you need.
And tell me your thoughts, because this I was at a conference recently, and this was, it was, I should say, a women's conference. It wasn't related to bereavement. And one of the big questions I came up with, which people sincerely did not know what to do and were sincerely asking for help, is what to do when a bereaved person returns to work. Like, what are some thoughts you have on how the workplace could help, whether it's the manager or just the coworker? Because people really wanted to know, and many of you in the audience were like, oh, I don't think I did the right thing. Oh, I think I said the wrong thing. So, yeah, I'd be curious to hear what you think about that to help our listeners.
So that's one area that I'm working on that I know from my own experience. When I came back to work, at the time I worked at a university, and I worked with a lot of students. And when I came back, I was gone for a month. And when I came back to the office, I had cards, and everybody wanted to talk to me, and it was so overwhelming.
Okay.
I just couldn't process it. It was just too much. And and they were all good intentioned. I wasn't upset, but I almost wanted to just hide in my office and go cry because it was just so much. It was just too much. And because everybody wanted to give me a hug or say hello, how are you? And it was all so good intention, but it was just so overwhelming. And I think you don't want to do nothing because then the person feels like, wow, no one cares here. So I think it's a balance. Don't all jump in the person's face the minute they walk in the door. I think just kind of gradually checking in and seeing how the person is doing. And I think sometimes it's going to depend on the person, too, because some people may want to just dive into work and don't want to talk about it. And some people might need a little bit more gradually moving their way through. I think as a supervisor, probably sitting down with the person and kind of easing them back into workload.
And the supervisor can help share the workload.
And you have to watch that because you don't want the other employees saying, oh, well, now I'm going to have to carry this person's load for them, and that can breed resentment in the workplace. But at least in the beginning, until you figure out kind of where that person is.
As they get back up to speed, cut them a little slack for a little while,
Right. And just, don't, the minute they walk in the door, if they've, lost their child, you don't want to say, okay, here's the 50 things that you didn't do while you were gone. You want to just, I would think as a supervisor, you'd want to sit down with the person, check in and see kind of how they are, talk about the workload, and just ease them back into the process. And then as staff members, maybe don't overwhelm them the minute they get back. But check in, maybe make a lunch date with the person, or can we get coffee, and just see how the person's doing. Because, again, some of it is just so specific to the person. Some people may not want to talk about it with their colleagues.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Because maybe they're not, not everybody has a warm, friendly work environment. So maybe they don't want to speak to colleagues about it. Maybe they just want to go into work, get their work done, and leave. But some people may have a more supportive work environment, and that, it may be appropriate, set up some away time, because, that person's not going to want to sit in the staff meeting and say, well, I feel this way about this. Give it a more personal approach, Take them out for coffee, take them out for lunch, and check in with them periodically. And again, know that it's not going to be something that they get over in a day. Maybe they were gone for a couple weeks, but this is going to be a lifetime process for them. So let them talk about how they feel about being back at work and allow them the space they need, but also let them know that you're being supportive. So it's kind of a balancing act. But again, it's going to be back to how that person is, and again, the environment that was before. If it wasn't a supportive environment before, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a supportive environment the next day.
Yeah, and two, I think if it is an environment that's more sterile, let's say that's not the correct word, but yeah, I think even if you can just acknowledge the loss, you know, have everyone sign a card, put it on the person's desk, as you said earlier, don't avoid the grieving person, acknowledge them, you know, because I unfortunately, I think some people in their work environment, the loss might just not even be acknowledged because people are afraid or don't know what to say. And one thing we haven't touched on, I would suggest not sharing similar experiences. And what I mean is just don't say, I know just how you feel. Because as you keep pointing out, everyone's experience is different. It is a balancing act. And you really don't know exactly how someone else feels. So.
Right. And it also doesn't give them the opportunity to talk about their loss. I mean, somehow it ends up being about the other person. So,
yeah.
You know, I think people, maybe if the person doesn't know that you lost a spouse or had a similar situation, you know, maybe mention it, but don't go into your life story because then it becomes about you rather than about them. I personally like to know that someone's lost someone, but if I'm, you know, just getting back, I would like the opportunity to talk about my feelings. But it is good to know when someone has gone through it because then you think, to me at least, if I find it, that the person is going to be a little bit more understanding than someone that has never experienced that. But the trick is to not go into a long history about yourself unless the person asks.
Sure. And then perhaps later you might know that person could be a potential sounding board or maybe they would be more available to you later because they have had a loss as well.
Right.
And I should also mention, to give you a little break from talking, on your website, I did not know what to say.com, you also had a little gift that people can go to your website and get. Well, can you tell us a little bit about that or how they get that?
Yeah, on the website, and it's ididnotknowwhattosay.com, if you go to our website, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter. And our newsletter, what we do is give different tips on different types of losses and try to just touch on all the questions people have. And so each month is a different topic. And as part of signing up for the monthly newsletter, there's a free report that you'll receive. It's called 25 Supportive Things You Can Do for Someone That Has Lost a Loved One, plus 10 Thoughtful Gift Ideas. And so you can receive that once you sign up for the newsletter. And then you'll get monthly tips also on how to help someone that's grieving.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a really nice resource. Yeah, so let's get back to any other tips that you might have for us.
I had a few more. One is I call waiting for a thank you. One of the things that people, when they're doing things for someone that's grieving, I've noticed that they think, wow, I don't know if this is really impacting them. I don't know if they really appreciate what I'm doing. And especially in the first couple months, the person is probably numb and doesn't really even know what's going on. But I would encourage people to keep doing those things because even though your friend may not be saying thank you all the time for everything that you're doing, they really do appreciate it. And down the road, it's going to be such a significant impact in their life. So don't wait around for someone to say thank you for what you're doing. Just know that down the road, they're going to be really appreciative of everything you've done, even if at the moment there's just so much going on in their head and in their heart that they can't really maybe express their appreciation. I just don't want people to get discouraged if they're not feeling like what they're doing is being impactful on their friends' lives.
Yeah, and also, too, I think people might, or as a suggestion, they might avoid saying, call me if you need anything, because the person is so in upheaval, they're not going to call you. You, if you want to help, really probably need to reach out directly and give specific offers of assistance. Then also, I would suggest if you say you're going to do something, do it.
Don't promise. I think that's the biggest thing, you know, saying, oh, I'll be there for you, and then you never hear from the person again.
So, I mean, it's just common sense stuff, but sometimes it does get lost in this whole grief process because we're just not used to it. So, tell us more.
Well, I think that's such an important point. I think most people would rather you say nothing or don't promise to show up if you're really not going to, because it's actually pretty hurtful, because you think you can depend on someone and then you find out you can't. And it's almost better to say that you're not going to be there for someone than to make that promise.
Sure.
So I think that is so important. I hear that over and over again, that people say, oh, that person said they would be there and they weren't. And I think setting limitations is okay as well. It may feel a little uncomfortable, but if the person is very emotional and that's just not something you can handle, be honest, or help them find a support group that might be able to facilitate what they need at the moment better. Try not to run away. I know that when someone's really heavily into the emotional part of grief, it's scary for people. They don't know how to handle it. They don't know what to say, and a lot of people will just walk away. And I think, you know, being honest and saying, this is pretty much as I can handle right now for you, and then helping that person maybe find some other support group that can help them is important too.
And plus, too, as we talked about, all the resources on the internet, you know, you can look there and give suggestions to the bereaved person, like, here's a support group in our area just for your consideration. Again, so they don't, you're trying to fix them, but just some ideas for you. You know, again, we have your website with lots of resources too. So help is so much more prevalent now, or easier to find, I think. So
yeah, a lot more easy to find, and there's a lot of things you can either do online or in person. And you know, there's churches have groups, and then there's groups that are not associated with churches, and there's just so much out there now. And one of the things also, maybe be patient. I know when my mom was diagnosed with cancer, and then also after she passed away, you know, everybody gives you 1,000 books and 1,000 resources, and it's so much to process. You're like, oh my goodness, I don't know what to do with all this information. And just allow them to find the space. You know, they may not want to jump into a support group the day after someone died. You know, someone may, but someone may not. So just allow, you know, maybe offer the suggestion, and then allow them the space to make their own choice. There's a scene in Sleepless in Seattle that everybody had given him a card for grief counselors and grief groups, and he goes through it, and he's like, you know, and his whole thing, you know, was like, you know, we will cure you, and he's like, well, I'll be cured when I can grow a new heart, you know, and, you know, he had to find his own way, you know, and for him it was moving and starting a new life, and, you know, so each person's going to be so different about what makes them find wholeness again. There's no cookie cutter. Everybody has their own way of working through this. It'd be nice if there was the magic pill or the magic thing, but each person.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I'm like, darn, I wish there was a cookie cutter, you know. But yeah, so
be patient, and you know, try not to overwhelm the person and expect that they're going to be cured the next day. It's going to take time. But have faith that they're going to get through it. I think that's what people need to know, is that it's going to take time, and you're going to have ups and downs. It's going to be like a roller coaster at times, and you know, years will go by. You think you're perfectly fine, and then something will hit you, and you'll be emotional about it. But each little step forward will help that person find a new normal and find a new way of living with that loss. You know, you don't always feel like you get over it. It's just a new way of living with the loss of that person.
And that's a great way to describe it because, yeah, you don't really ever get over the loss. It is a new way of living with loss. So that's, I love the way you explain that. And I love the way that you keep bringing us back to balance because everyone is different. So that is so important there as well.
One of the things my mentor and spiritual person that I worked with for many years did for me afterwards is we talked, you know, he just sat with me after my mom died. And, you know, we talked a lot about, his comment was, don't jump in the grave with her. And that's, I think, the hardest thing is to find life again after someone significant has, that you've lost someone significant. And our normal reaction is to shut down and not let life in. And that's one thing that he really helped me with was just to understand that she may be gone, but my life still goes on, and I have to find a way to keep moving forward. And that's what, you know, she would have wanted for me, that I need to still grieve the loss of her, but I still need to be open to life and not jump in the grave with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's such a
hard
way to, it's a hard way to hear it, but that really gets the point home. And sometimes you just do want to hold on to that grief to stay close to the person, but we know that just simply doesn't work. It's just sometimes I think people, you want to do that, but your loved one does want you to go on and have a good life and live a great legacy and remembrance of them as well. And of course they want you to be super happy. Unfortunately, we do all have to grieve and mourn. And then as we heal, we can open up to life again. Because, you know, in the beginning of the call, you mentioned your mom died in 1993. You didn't start this until 2009. So you healed, but then look at all the great things you've gone on to do, correct, as so many other people do?
Right. Yeah, I think there's just a lot you can offer. After going through something significant like that, I think there's a lot you can offer other people after you've gone through your own healing process.
Right.
It's an ongoing process. I think that's the one thing people just need to remember is, you know, you get to the point that you get back in your routines or you have your new normal, but it's still part of you. It'll always be a part of you, but it doesn't have to define you.
Yeah, that's excellent information as well, or a reminder, don't let it define you. So you're really bringing out a lot of wonderful points for the listeners. And we're getting close to the end of our time, so could we wrap up with the additional points you wanted to share with us?
The one thing I just wanted to mention was one of the things that we do on the site is share different stories and resources. So I just wanted to invite everybody, if they do have a resource or if they did have a letter or anything like that, that they'd like to share. I know some of those are real personal, so they may not want to share it, but even excerpts of it that they'd like to share, we'd love to include that because I even find myself going to the website when someone's passed away and I'm like, okay, what do I want to say to this person and get tidbits, you know. So if anybody has a resource that they'd like to share, we'd love to hear from them. And, you know, like I said in the beginning, one of my biggest goals is just that people have a positive experience and that if their friends and family want to get ideas, that we're there for them to help them, you know, encourage them to do to create a positive and supportive environment for people. And that's really what our goal is that I really want people to have the type of experience that I have, because it actually kind of breaks my heart when I hear stories like yours, Chelsea, that you didn't have a positive experience. And people should. It's the most devastating, you know, thing that, you know, most people will go through, and to not have a positive experience, it saddens me that people don't have that experience.
Yeah, and, well, kudos to you for having all this information available. And if people do have something they'd like to send to you to add to your site, do they just email, like, info@IDidNotKnowWhatToSay.com?
Yeah, that's it, the email address. And if there's any authors that would like to talk to me as well, we are open to doing some more of the virtual book tours. We give them a list of questions, and they can do that at their leisure, and then we'll post that on our website and on our blog.
Yeah, and I recall I did that a few years ago with you, yep. And it was quite an easy process, because I know people sometimes are so busy, I can't add another thing to my list. But you did make it easy for people to share their valuable information. And we have had, or will have, some speakers also in our telesummit who are authors. So I will talk to them about that as well, because I think they have valuable information to provide. And then last thing that you said earlier in the call, people could go to your website and download your free guide. Just let's remind them about that one more time, because I know that's important information too.
So the guide is 25 supportive things you can do for someone that has lost a loved one, and then it also gives 10 ideas for thoughtful gifts that you can give someone that's grieving. And then also you'll be signing up for our monthly newsletter that will be sending out by email, and that will just give some more tips on how to help someone that's grieving.
Yeah, so lots of great information both for the person who's bereaved as well as the grief professionals or people who support the bereaved. So, yeah, thanks again, Lori, for all the work you do. We really appreciate it. We appreciate your time this morning as well. And let me ask you one last question, and we will close our session. If you could just get one message out to the world about grief, death, loss, dying, what is that one message you would want on the national stage? I think you've kind of alluded to it already.
There's so many, but one of the biggest things is that grief is normal and that we should all embrace someone that's going through that. It's one of the hardest things that any of us have to go through. And I think that the more someone feels supported, and loved through that process, it helps them heal much faster than having to step down those emotions and pretend like everything's okay. So I think that, you know, just to remind people that grief's normal and that we're all going to go through it at some point, and that we should all just really be open-hearted and supportive of someone that's going through that process.
Thank you for your message, Lori. That's great. And we will let everyone go. Thanks for tuning into the call. Take care, and we hope you join us for some of our upcoming sessions as well. Thanks again, Lori.
Thank you, Chelsea. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, Chelsea. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, Chelsea. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, Chelsea. I really